last time on Clappercast.
It would be great for that to go to Game 7 as well. And it would be funny if the Leafs lost in Game 7.
It would be, because would they have the 3-1 series lead? Yeah. The storylines would be fantastic off of that.
Yeah, and Montreal fans would forever have that over Leafs fans. Be like, you might have Austin Matthews, you might have Mitch Marner, but you were up 3-1 against us.
Yeah, you know,
Corey Perry,
really...
game-winning goal.
Oh God. Don't do that to me.
What's going on, everybody? This is episode 93 of the Clappercast. I'm Burke, and as always, joined by my co-host, Sean. Sean, your worst nightmare came true. Corey Perry did get a series-winning goal. So how do you feel about that?
Everything hurts. My bracket took a massive hit the second round. Corey Perry's having a good postseason, unfortunately, and it's just everything hurts right now.
Yeah, he had a good postseason last year, too. For the Stars, where there's a period where him and Joe Pavelski were getting absolutely every goal for the Stars.
We joked about his redemption arc through 2020, where it's like he's the only person in the world who would have a good, like an upswing through 2020.
Yeah, and he's having a not bad 2021 as well. Really providing a good option with that line with him, Armia, and Eric Staal on Montreal. And I guess that's a good place to kind of start our episode, is just that, talking about that series. And I think, you know, not to toot our own horn here a little bit, but I'm going to do exactly that. At the beginning of the season, we talked about when Montreal was having their immediate success and getting all those shorthanded goals and everything. We were talking about how they had, at that time, like three really good lines. And how they didn't have any of those star players, but they had...
Yeah, they have like three really good second lines at the beginning of the season. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and in playoffs so far, it seems like everything's been clicking for them. You know, Carey Price has been outstanding, and then their forwards have been just doing really good work. Their defense has been solid. They haven't been chipping in offensively as much, but... towards the end of that Jets series, they were starting to get involved.
The worry
more.
Now is that, I mean, Shea Weber still hurt. I think he has a hand injury, so he's still on the mend from that. And now Jeff Petrie has two dislocated fingers that he's able to play through, but they're going to be they're going to need surgery in the offseason or something.
Yeah, I guess the only one silver lining is that Romanov got his introduction into the series in his first playoffs. Sorry, I don't know if you could pick up that siren, but someone's really excited about Romanov outside my apartment. So I guess that's kind of cool. I know he's a really well-liked player amongst Habs fans, and so he got to get some action. He threw the body around a bit and didn't play that much, but with Petrie out of the lineup, he slotted in, so getting some valuable experience there. What did you think about that series? Aside from Montreal's kind of depth and Carey Price, what did you think kind of made the series go that way?
It all centers around Scheifele's hit and suspension. I mean, that was an absolutely atrocious hit by a player who should know better. Completely unnecessary, completely justifiable in that 4-game suspension he got for it. But Scheifele being arguably the Jets' best player, the best skater for sure, the best skater, he's now gone for four games, games 2, 3, 4, and 5. And I mean, ultimately they didn't even need the fifth game, but you're missing your best player after and all those games, and it makes it a lot easier for Montreal, a deep team, to take advantage of Winnipeg, who's down their best player, who's already got depth issues to begin with.
Yeah, I think having their best skater out of the series is, obviously not a great thing. And it looked like they were missing their best player. I mean, Wheeler was, like, invisible out there. He and Scheifele play so much together, and so much of what Scheifele does is being able to, make time and space for his line mates. And, Wheeler didn't have his time and space to get open and to you know, get a shot off. He didn't have anybody who could give him the pass. And, you know, I think that the suspension was definitely, I agree with it. It was a stupid hit. It was totally egregious and unnecessary, and just the level of violence was just stupid. And I wanted to know if you had a chance to see Mark Scheifele's response in his, you know, his press conferences at the end of their season, and what your thoughts are, if you did catch those.
I didn't watch it. I just kind of saw the response to it being kind of like that he was very dismissive of the whole thing. So I didn't actually watch or catch it, unfortunately. But
yeah, to sum it up, he sounded very pissy about it, that his, I'm paraphrasing here, but his season was ended by the league, and that, you know, he wasn't able to play in the playoffs, and that, that, you know, he thinking about it, he, this is days after the hit actually happened, that he had no other option there except for giving up on his teammates and stopping his back check. So you either, you know, smoke the guy.
Yeah, you either take a 190-foot run up on a guy, or you give up on your team. That's kind of a weird, that's kind of a weird black and white situation there.
Yeah. So, like, I am, like, a big fan of huge hits, and I like that style of play, but, like, there's no way you're stopping that goal. You're not even trying to play the puck, and that was actually one of the factors that came into play in determining the suspension, was that he made no real attempt to stop the goal. And so, yeah, I think, yeah, if you want to stop that, maybe dive, you know, dive, or don't ease up your skating and put your skate into the post or something like that. So, yeah, I don't know. There's lots he could have done there, but I thought it was very disappointing and almost embarrassing for Mark Scheifele to not own up to that and just say, hey, you know what? I messed up, and I actually gave up on my teammates by taking myself out of the series by making
that
play.
It wasn't by the league. Letting individual emotion come into play there, because I didn't see or pay much attention to him through the game leading up to it, but it sounded like he was already starting to get a bit, you know, frustrated on the ice, taking taking some liberties on some guys, and eventually it just boiled over, and he ends up, you know, that 190-foot run up on a guy, and you go entirely for the hit on it. You don't even try to stop the play.
Yeah, he looked really frustrated all game, and just wired, and had his, you know, his eyes popping out of his head all game. And then on the flip side, you know, one player goes out of the series, and it's one other player's opportunity. That player that didn't really take that opportunity is Pierre-Luc Dubois, which led a lot of people to speculate that he might have been playing hurt. And so in that press conference, he was asked about that, if he was playing hurt, and he said no more than anybody else, and that, you know, he just didn't perform. And he's said, you know, I hold myself to a pretty high standard and didn't meet it, and it's nobody's fault but my own. You know, I had a bad year. And I just saw in the comments some people were like, why couldn't Scheifele take a page out of this guy's book?
Exactly. That's,
you know, Dubois was bad.
That's a hockey player response.
But at least he owned up to it. Right, like, yeah, I sucked.
That is a hockey player response better. Right there. I mean, you take the individual responsibility for your performance. You mentioned about people not being able to step into the other's shoes. You're looking at also at guys like Nick Ehlers and Kyle Connor. You know, they were both energetic and dynamic through the series, but the big thing with Scheifele being out is that they're stuck trying to play with new line mates. We saw it really bad. I think it was in the last game where Ehlers and Vesalainen were trying to play together. They just had their wires completely crossed. You know, they're trying to pass to each other, and they don't know where the other person's going to be. And I think Dubois was involved in that as well, where he's trying to play the wing, and he has no idea where he's supposed to be.
Yeah.
There is one, I think, was it Nate Thompson, was, like, pointing and yelling at him on the ice to get on the wing. Because he's trying to skate up the center or something.
Yeah.
You know, there's that's so huge when you just, nobody knows where they're going to be. Nobody knows where the line mates are going to be. You can't pass. Like, you can't get anything going, especially on a team that's going to pressure you like Montreal will.
Yeah, absolutely. And Montreal is just relentless, you know. They can basically roll four lines. Their fourth line is Corey Perry, Eric Staal, and Joel Armia. And they were generating offense too. And so it's hard to compete against that when you're missing your best player, and, you know, your guys aren't used to playing where they are in the lineup and just not getting anything going.
You know, on the flip side of guys not being used to playing and jumping around, Montreal can do that. They have players switching lines every single game. Everyone is kind of bought into the system. They know where everyone's going to be. They know how to jump around, and that's huge for the dynamic nature of that team. That fourth line, they only play like 10 minutes a game or something, but you hear them constantly. Like, they are always in the offensive zone. You hear their names way more than they play. And like, that's so huge for generating momentum and just getting pressure and possession, just stifling the other team when they're doing that.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that can't be overlooked when we're talking about why Winnipeg might have gotten swept here is just the fact that they lost Dylan DeMello in game one. And I know me and you have harped on this a lot, and despite the fact that Logan Stanley got two goals in the last game, their defense is just not good. It's not good. And, you know, wherever they ended up in the season standings and everything, it's just, I don't know, it seems like you can take a pretty easy look at that lineup and be like, it's missing somebody. And then when they lose another guy, one of their top four D-men, it's like, yeah, they can't withstand that, especially without the offense too. So just that 1-2 punch of losing your best offensive player and one of your top four D-men in the first game, it's like, that's not a recipe for success. And it's really no surprise that they didn't look like they could compete.
Yeah. So the fun thing is that we saw Winnipeg sweep Edmonton in the first round. Montreal sweeps Winnipeg. And to me, that sets up the inevitable Montreal getting swept in the semifinals.
What is this, 2019?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we'll see. Pretty surprising to see, two sweeps out of Canada here. But I think it's really positive because it allows Montreal to rest up a little bit here. I mean, they play pretty soon, I guess. But,
They'll be starting Monday.
But the plus for Montreal as well is the fact that they don't have to play any back-to-backs to catch up to the U.S. series, because that's something that was kind of in the works if that series went more than four, was that, you know, the Jets and Habs were going to have to play back-to-back to catch up, just to catch up time, because the first round went a bit longer with that, Toronto choke, which... also, shout out to Toronto for blowing that. That's pretty funny.
Another one.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess we should touch on that too, because it's been a while here. But
we never actually finished that series. We were predicting who was going to win Game 6.
Yeah, and I nailed it. I nailed it because I said that Montreal was going to win in front of the fans, and then if they lost that game, it was going to be really hard to come back from, and. I mentioned the Corey Perry series winning goal, and he ended up getting it. So, pretty awesome. It's just, I don't know what's wrong with Toronto. It's just I think I do, actually. I think it's Mitch Marner. I don't like that guy. I've never liked him. And I think it's just like, you see the penalty that he took when they went down five down on a two-man disadvantage. In game six, I guess, after the challenge, the delay of game, like, there's nobody by him, and he just, it's like, where's your heart? Like, where you got no heart?
Where's your brain?
You know, like, this isn't the Shit on the Leafs podcast, but we're Western Canadians, and so it always kind of comes into play. But you're the local guy, and you hold out for a huge contract, and then. You haven't scored a playoff goal in like 16 games or something. It's like, that's not conducive to being well liked by the fans. So, I think when that happened, we were talking about how like players don't owe teams a discount or anything, but it's like, if you dreamed of playing for the Toronto Maple Leafs growing up and you want to be there long term, maybe you can do something else besides holding out for a huge deal. And for them to just have three guys on huge deals, and for, Tavares got knocked out of the series, so that, that sucks. But your two guys that make like more than $10 million have got to be better than that. And so now it's in, now it's, what do you do? Because you signed that deal and you probably thought the cap was going up. It's not. What do you do?
Now you're, yeah, now you're stuck with, I mean, he's overpaid, I think, compared to the people who make similar amounts to him and what they are to the team. And that's just, it's such a hard one to deal with because you've strapped the team a little bit by having all of those massive contracts, and how are you going to get rid of that? I jokingly said Marner for Eichel as like, how else are you going to get a trade like that done by, unless you're swapping caps? You know, it's just such a hard one, and to figure out if like what exactly is the barrier between the Maple Leafs and playoff success. You know, what's going on? Like, why can they not find their game in those big moments?
Yeah, I think it's just like the killer instinct. Like, their goaltending was good. I think that's the best their goaltending has been in a playoff series since they've been in this streak of not being able to win one. I mean, until game 7, I think Campbell's numbers were better than Price's.
Pretty much all of the Leafs' numbers were better than in Montreal. I mean, they had like a 0% power play for most of that series.
Yeah. So again, like, you know, you get a few more power play goals,
you know,
different story. So yeah, I don't know. It's just, you know, when it's all on the line, you gotta get it done.
It's the, yeah.
And,
it's the finish.
So I don't know how many memes, have got to be coming out of Toronto. It's like, you know, it was 4-1. It was a 3-1 series, you know, now you lost to not Boston. Like, they're just going to be the whipping boy of any joke.
Yeah, well, they're taking over the choker. I mean, it used to be San Jose, moved over to Washington. Now it's Toronto.
Yeah, and I think this is the first one where they've, like, legitimately been the favorite going in, right?
I have to imagine they were the favorite against, was Columbus in the play-in last year.
Maybe, like, and how they ended the season, but I think their records were pretty similar going into that playoff series. But yeah, they were probably like the slight favorite in that one, I guess. And then this one, it was like a clear, they won the division, you know, they
Montreal barely made it in. Like, they were the worst team that made it into the playoffs.
Yeah, and I mean, they were one of the worst when they beat the Penguins, you know, last year too. So
yeah, they were like the team that made it, like, by just nothing. Like, they were so far behind everything and barely made it in.
So it's been fun.
Which, I mean, here's you know, we talk about Toronto not having a killer instinct. Well, here's Montreal. They apparently have it.
Yeah, I guess so. Like,
they can perform in those moments, whatever team's systems they've all bought into, and just have everything rolling. It's yeah. They've got,
I mean,
that
here's instinct. Here's a thought for you. Like, the veterans that Montreal brought in, like Corey Perry, Eric Staal, guys with cups. The veterans that Toronto brought in, you know, Jumbo, and then Wayne Simmonds and Nick Foligno. Nick Foligno got hurt in that series, but none of them have cup. So, like, does that play a part? You know, bring in cup winners. You know, you hear that all the time during like playoffs.
It's an interesting direct comparison, like, for sure.
Yeah, because it's like, dude, they know what it takes. Like, Corey Perry was there last season. Like, he got to the finals. You know, he scored a lot of big goals.
I mean, he's got his cup with Anaheim.
Yeah, early in his career, he knows what it takes to, you know, he's seen the leadership of, like, guys like Niedermeyer, Pronger, probably.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just kind of interesting. You know, Eric Staal has been around for a long time and won that cup in Carolina. So, you know, just guys that won pretty early in their careers and want to get back there. So just kind of interesting, you know, to see that you brought in guys that have won versus guys that are trying to get their last kick of the can here. And so, I don't know, just kind of interesting different strategies, and I don't know what Toronto's going to look like next year. They've got a lot of decisions to make, you know, I don't know if they're going to be as good, quite honestly, of a team. So anyway, it's going to be fun to watch Montreal go up on a bit of a run here. You know, regardless of how they end up, they weren't expected to go this far. So really anything is a success, and it's been really fun to see fans in attendance in Montreal. And you were totally right. Like, they were so loud. It's so awesome. And so I hope moving forward, you know, if Montreal goes further, and even in this third round, that the number of fans in attendance can maybe grow. That'd be really awesome to see. And then I guess let's change gears and move over to the other one that I nailed, which was the Tampa Bay Lightning defeating the Carolina Hurricanes in five. So that one kind of was no surprise to me, but I will say that Carolina had a lot of injuries that popped up in that series.
Yeah, so they were a little bit, their roster was a little bit taken down. I think they're missing like Niederreiter, and Trocheck was playing with like a sprained MCL or something.
They're not a big deal.
Yeah, no, not at all. But yeah, I mean, I'm surprised how quick this one was. Tampa just dominated. They're dialed in. And that's all there is to say about that. I mean, when a team is playing as well and as cohesive as Tampa is right now, it's hard for a team, even a team as good as Carolina is, to really break through. And I mean, Carolina, I think they're running a third D pairing of Mikhail Sergachev and David Savard right now.
Gross.
As a testament to how deep their roster is. And to have that much depth, that much skill, that much experience, like up and down their lineup, it's, you know, this team is just built, like their window is wide open and they're just built to win.
Yeah. It was interesting. I was watching bits and pieces of, you know, the last two games in the series, and I realized, like, I knew it made sense to go to Mrazek after, you know, they lost game three, I guess, is the last game Nedeljkovic played. And so they went to Mrazek, and he played really well in the first game. But in that last game, he did not look good. Like, I don't know if you watched that game, but like some of the goals that they got were not very strong. Like, there's some where, like, one of them, he's like standing straight up and like didn't really make it to attempt to like slide over, and they just put it right by his pad. And then that one goal that was on like a 2-on-0 or 2-on-1, and I think it was Palat passed it over to Kucherov, and he like one timed it along the ice from like the blue line. Like, it was a quick shot, but, like, Mrazek didn't even move, and it was from, like, you know, like, 50 feet away.
So far
it's
away.
Like, what are you doing?
It's kind of an easy one you have to have.
Yeah, and it was just, like, such a taking a wind out of your sails moment for that. And, you know, it comes down to more than goaltending, but, like, oh, I mean, he got a sub-800 save percentage in that last game. That's...
Yeah, and that's well below playoff standards.
Yeah. So not ideal, but yeah, I mean, you're right. Like, just Tampa's in, they're rolling. Everything's going well for them. Their power play is still insane.
The $100 million roster is ready to go.
So there's actually a comment from Dougie Hamilton that said, "We lost to a team that's $18 million over the salary cap," and I don't know. I really agree with him on that. It's really frustrating when the team is taking advantage of a loophole in the salary cap. To, you know, like Tampa's doing. And, you know, I already didn't like Tampa, and now that they're kind of doing this, and I know Chicago won a cup doing this, but it's just so annoying, and I hate it so much.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Dougie's coming from a place of saltiness right after a series loss, but it's an accurate statement that it's like they're using a loophole in, you know, the way salary caps are applied and administered and, you know, used in the postseason. And it's giving them a significant advantage by being able to play well over what they normally would be. You know, with a situation like this, you have to imagine and hope that the league is going to amend those specific sections of the CBA that kind of deal with LTIR and postseason cap space to either, you know, enforce the cap in the postseason in some way, or to change how LTIR works. But I mean, technically Tampa's doing nothing wrong, but that doesn't mean it's kind of sleazy what they're doing. Doesn't mean it isn't sleazy what they're doing.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, I mean, it was a pretty quick series. I think the Hurricanes have some work to do in the offseason as well.
The biggest one for them is that Dougie Hamilton's a UFA.
Yeah.
And whether or not they're going to be able to retain him and if he's going to be able to stay, because he's such a big part of that defense, as he's kind of blossomed into kind of a borderline Norris candidate for a couple of seasons here, especially with the amount of offense he provides. So it's going to be – that'll be a big loss if he isn't able to stay in Carolina.
Yeah, and if Rod Brind'Amour wants to stick around as head coach, I think those are kind of the two main things, and we'll see. But Tampa Bay moving on to the semifinals. And then the other Eastern, I guess, if you want to call it that, matchup was the Islanders versus the Bruins. And I called Islanders. I think I called them in seven, though, rather than six. And so the Islanders won in six. And they really just kind of wore down the Bruins, it looked like. In that last game, the Bruins looked exhausted. They looked so tired.
Yeah, I mean, this is the Bruins are a team that plays late into every season. They're perennially in the second, third round, if not the cup final, like they were a couple years back. And, you know, it, on one hand, they're used to this amount of games and the type of schedule. But on the other, you play a team like the Islanders and, you know, they're bigger, they're more physical, they're just going to wear you down. And you made a comment during the last game that the Bruins' defense is a lot smaller than it used to be. And talking about the impact that that's having when they're trying to play up against the bigger, more physical forwards that the Islanders were icing. That, like, Palmieri was just able to overpower them just with his strength and size.
Yeah, particularly Matt Grizzlick just got picked off by the Islanders forwards in the last game. Like, they were able to force mistakes in to cause every one of their goals, you know, with the exception of their empty netters. But you know, there was basically a turnover or an unforced error basically amongst the Boston defense on every one of those goals. And New York Islanders, I think, are one of the best teams in the league that take advantage of mistakes. And I think the other team that's really good at that is Vegas. It's kind of been their style since they've come into the league. It's just take advantage of those opportunities that you're given. And they took advantage of them,
yeah.
Yeah, there's a smaller D. I think they were just being forced to make mistakes because of the heavy forecheck. You know, the Islanders have that quote-unquote identity line with Cal Clutterbuck, Matt Martin, and Casey Cizikas. And, you know, they've kind of been touted as, like, one of the best fourth lines in the league for a number of years. And, you know, they're just showing why that they're so valuable to that franchise because they were able to do that. They were able to keep up the forecheck, get the hits going, make those unforced errors basically happen because those D-men are, you know, looking over their shoulder. They're hitting the panic button a little bit and making a shitty pass or a shitty breakout instead of, you know, taking the time to make the right play. And Semyon Varlamov definitely played really well. Was able to shut the door. He made a lot of timely saves for sure. And it's just so interesting.
It's interesting seeing the Islanders have swapped between Sorokin and Varlamov a couple of times through the playoffs. Now, usually kind of one guy takes the reins and then you ride him the rest of the way out. Right. But they started with Varlamov, I think, for a couple of games, and Sorokin got them through the first series and Varlamov came in and got them this one in quick order, in short order again. So we'll see, you know, how long that lasts. If Tampa's offense is going to have to make another switch in net for the Islanders and maybe Sorokin comes in again, but that's a lot of goalie switching for the playoffs, in my opinion.
Riding the hot hand to the extreme. And I think that Trotz has been doing a good job of not switching too early, like when a goalie like has a loss, but I think they played well. He hasn't been like, you know, switching. So it's not like they're not losing confidence. You know, it's like kind of giving them that opportunity to be like, hey, yeah, you know what? We're going to switch goalies when the team needs a kick in the ass, not when the goalie made, like, one error or something.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a huge fan of Trotz, and I was happy to see him move on. And I'm kind of on the Montreal and Islanders bandwagon right now. And The other thing that I wanted to ask you about is, Cassidy made some comments about how the Islanders were, getting away with a lot of penalties that the Bruins were getting called, and he called them the New York Saints, and then Islanders fans were just running with that and, doing like when the Saints come marching in, and during the game they're chanting New York Saints and everything. But I didn't really see a lot of missed calls, particularly one-sided in that series. Did you see like the Islanders getting away with a lot of stuff, like in the regular season, and Trotz, his kind of response to that comment was, well, the Islanders were like fifth or something the Islanders were like the fifth least penalized team during the regular season, and I think the Bruins were in like the top 10. So, if you're getting called more, that's kind of in line with how your team plays. So did you really see like a great divide in the amount of penalty calls? Because I didn't really see that, but maybe I'm just not a huge Boston fan and didn't really see it.
There wasn't a whole lot of egregious stuff. The thing is, too, it's playoff hockey, so obviously the whistles are going away, and maybe a lot of those little minor stick infractions aren't going to get called that maybe they would have in the regular season. Maybe that's where Cassidy's coming from. It does seem to happen that one team seems to get the officials' favor for one reason or another, and they get, the more timely or the more favorable calls, or the more consistent calls in their favor. But I don't think there's anything too egregious in the Islanders' favor or anything that would have swung the series so significantly that it would warrant a whole lot of criticism from Boston's side.
Yeah, when Boston was in the finals against the Blues, I would have seen a point to that. That would have been valid to me because it seemed like St. Louis was definitely playing the physical game more than Boston was, and they were kind of getting away with some stuff. But in that series, I didn't really see the Islanders as, getting away with a bunch of dirty stuff. And I don't know, I just didn't see it. So I just thought it was kind of weird that he spoke up about it so vocally.
Yeah, it is. Something there must have been a couple of significant ones that he had noticed or he had seen that got overlooked. For a coach to make that type of bold statement in the playoffs, got him a $25,000 fine. For him to come out and make that statement in the playoffs, something must have happened. I didn't see it, but there must have been one or two really just bad missed calls or something that called against them earlier in the game that got missed on the later portions. But yeah, it didn't seem completely one sided.
Yeah, and if it was, I didn't see it. Maybe as not like I hate Boston, but like I didn't want to see them win that series. So maybe I just totally was blinded to it. The Islanders played a really good game. Like I said, I think that they really capitalized on the chances they got and just scored a lot. And I saw a lot of people saying the Islanders won even though they weren't the better team out there. It's like, what are you talking about? They scored when they needed to. So what? Their goalie was better and they scored, and I'm not trying to say that it's Tuukka Rask's fault at all, because I think Boston fans really fall into that trap of, if your goalie's not sensational every night, he's not a good goalie. But Varlamov definitely won the duel in that series, and I thought it was interesting that Boston didn't go with Swayman in the last game there.
Yeah,
I thought they would have maybe done that.
With the way the series had been heading, with the speculation around Tuukka Rask's injury and his, status and readiness to play, you've got a guy who had an amazing regular season. He took over the backup job from Yaroslav Halak. It's weird to throw in a guy in an elimination game for his first playoff appearance, I think, but I feel like that's one of those situations where you kind of should make that change to get a goalie who's healthy and also just give the team like an energy boost, because they're going to want to play good for this guy.
Yeah, you saw it in Florida with Spencer Knight. They didn't win that series, but they won the game.
Yeah.
So,
and Sorokin comes in and the Islanders win through the first round.
Yep. Yeah. So anyway, Boston, their window's still open, I guess, and they're still one of the better teams in the league, but another year where they didn't get it done. That's kind of sucks, but it was fun to see the Islanders get through, and they've gone back to back to the semis for the first time since like the 80s, so it's pretty cool to see that. And they've got a tough matchup with the Lightning, but I hope that they can do it. But let's talk about the last second round series here, which was the Vegas Golden Knights defeating the Colorado Avalanche in six. And this was kind of surprising to me. Colorado had a really strong start and then just kind of fell off the rails a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you said, Colorado came out flying in that series. They dominated that first game, and then, you know, Vegas made, you know, credit to them, because Vegas made some very quick and very astute changes to the lineup, to the system, to the gameplay, and they lost game two, but they were probably the better team for a lot of that game, and they shut down Nathan MacKinnon for like four straight games. That he didn't have a point, or he was very, very invisible. So to be able to do that, you know, because with how good that line, with how good MacKinnon, Rantanen, and Landeskog had been, it's good. It makes it so much easier when you shut that line down, and then suddenly, you know, you've got, you know, Vegas is a strong, deep team. They play an aggressive, high-paced game. If they can shut down the opposing team's offense, then they kind of get the ability to control the game, and that's exactly what they did through the rest of that series.
Yeah, Vegas really took over. Kudos to them to making those adjustments. You know, Peter DeBoer making the changes. And Bednar tried to shake things up. I mean, he split up that top line to try and get some more offense going. And in game five, it looked like it was working. And then they just had lost in that heartbreaker overtime with Mark Stone getting the winner, like 30 seconds in or whatever.
Very quick, it was less than a minute.
And then, like, they came out hot in the last game here, but Vegas just, you know, they got right back in it. They got that goal right after that, like a minute later or something.
They had an answer.
Got the lead. And so it was a bit of a back and forth, but Vegas was able to just power through. Their depth and just how good they are. Like you said, they were able to shut down MacKinnon, which, as we've seen before in playoffs, when MacKinnon isn't going, that the Avalanche aren't going. He didn't get a point in the last four or whatever, and they lost all those games pretty much. So they got to find a way to, you know, get some more scoring there. And, you know, having Kadri out hurts, but, you know, kind of like how we were talking with Scheifele, it's like you got to be able to keep yourself in the game. So, again, it sounds like a broken record, but a lot of these teams have some interesting off seasons, and Colorado again is going to be right up in there. So we'll see if they're able to kind of, you know, keep their core together and be able to make another push. But for some of these teams, it's going to be hard to see them as good of teams as they were this season. Because other teams are going to get better.
Going back to Nathan MacKinnon for a second. In games, would have been 3, 4, and 5, he had no points. Game two, he only had one assist. But the interesting thing is, looking at games 4 and 5, he only had 16:43 of ice time in game four and 18:58 in game five. And that was an overtime. I guess it was only a minute of overtime, but that seems fairly low. His games before that seemed to trend closer to the low 20s. So that's a bit of a dip for him.
Yeah, so I wonder if he's playing with a bit of an injury, or if that was a
coach's decision.
You know, a decision made by the coach, because I don't know why you wouldn't play him more if you're trying to get offense going and everything.
Maybe it was a consequence of splitting up the top line, that then you're rolling, you know, two top lines instead of one. A couple of the minutes went to where Landeskog was playing.
Could be, yeah. And similar to how we were talking about Boston with their smaller defense, you know, Colorado has a smaller defense too. They've got a young defense, and we saw that in this series. They made a lot of mistakes. You know, they made some really bad plays, you know, in overtime, like that Ryan Graves. He shot it into someone's pad. The shooting lane wasn't open. He tried to force it through, got blocked, went down, got scored on, game lost. And then Patrick Nemeth made some pretty crucial mistakes as well, like failed clears and some miscommunications, and they got torn apart. Vegas is too good of a team to make those mistakes and make those turnovers. So, if they scored the same amount and were able to kind of tidy up defensively, they might have been winning more games. They just made some really costly mistakes, and I think, you know, they're going to lose a really good player, I think, in the expansion draft. And I don't know if they're going to be as good next season, but, you know, they also have guys like Eric Johnson didn't even play a single game this year, but he was practicing, skating at least, kind of near the end of their playoffs here. And so maybe he'll be back and be able to, you know, provide a bit more stability in their back end. But, man, that was tough to watch some of those mistakes that they were making.
Yeah, and that comes with them being, the young learning team, because they're just at the beginning of their window. And, I mean, yeah, they've had a couple of disappointing playoffs here where they've lost out earlier than expected, a couple years in a row here. But they're gonna figure it out. Their guys are gonna get some experience. I mean, Cale Makar's already a Norris finalist. He's gonna be amazing right away. They're gonna get Bowen Byram in the lineup regularly. Eric Johnson, like you mentioned, should be back next year. You know, it's all just gonna be a couple years of learning experience. Getting the playoff experience, kind of fine-tuning the roster, and we probably won't be talking about those same level of mistakes at next year's playoffs with this team.
Yeah, you'd hope so. Just making simple plays, it's bread and butter hockey, keeping it simple. That's like Toronto, Dermott making that, I don't know what that was, that spinorama attempt in his own zone, and he got picked off by Kotkaniemi. And, OT winner.
Kinda,
that's the game they lost Muzzin in.
Kind of reminiscent of those Jake Gardner plays in the previous years for Toronto, right? Weird behind the back pass.
What are you doing? Yeah, what are you doing? Like, keep it simple.
Yep.
If you're a depth D-man and you're being asked to play, like, more minutes because a guy got hurt, don't pull that shit.
Yeah.
Glassing out. Like, play it simple.
Yeah.
Play it safe. Why do that? So...
On another note with this series, do you think this was some of the best hockey we've seen in a long time, in just terms of how fast, how exciting, just the action, the intensity of some of the games, even if they weren't close in score, just the back and forth chances and just how fun it was to watch?
Yeah, I think if you're someone who likes offense, that's probably as good as it's going to get. If you like defense, probably not. there were some huge saves on both ends. There was also some really bad goals on both ends. And so if you like the offense, but maybe not, if you're a defenseman or a goalie, you might not have liked these series. But, if you're a scoring forward, you probably liked it a lot. It was really exciting. It was a nail biter, and I really wanted it to go seven. I really wanted Colorado to win, but... it would have been cool to see it go to game seven and just how electric it would have been. But, it was awesome. Definitely lived up to the hype. And so I guess to kind of wrap up the second round, we should probably talk about these semifinal third round matchups and just give a bit of a prediction. And so let's start with the Tampa Bay Lightning versus the New York Islanders. I'm going to go with the underdog here. I'm going to say the Islanders in seven because I want it to happen. I'm going to manifest it. It's going to happen. They're going to win the New York Saints. They're not going to give Tampa Bay any power plays to score on.
See, that's the key. That's the key. That's where they shut down Tampa's power play by not letting them have a power play then.
Exactly. So, but in all honesty, I think that, it's going to be really tight, I really want the Islanders to win, and for that reason alone, you know, I'm going to pick them. But it's going to be really hard for them to win, as it always is, but specifically against Tampa. It's going to be really damn near impossible, I think. How about you?
I still have to lean Tampa Bay in seven. Like you said, this is going to be a close series. Every single year, the Islanders are getting closer and closer and closer to finally breaking through with what they have. This year very well could be the year. But I think, like I mentioned earlier, Tampa's just rolling right now. They've got everything firing, firing on all cylinders. They've got so many just amazing players playing at the top of their games. And, the Islanders are going to have trouble shutting them down. I think they're well suited to do it, as they've shown, getting to where they are right now. But Tampa's just playing Tampa is playing way too well right now to be taken out, I think.
Yeah. All right. And then how about in the the other matchup, where you've got Vegas versus Montreal? Who are you taking in that one?
I mean, I mentioned it earlier. I have to follow the sweeps, so I'm going to have to go Vegas in four.
Yeah. I could very well see that happening. Kind of for the same reason I don't like Vegas. I want a Canadian team in the finals. I want Montreal to win, but I have a harder time picking them in this series. So, you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm just going to go Montreal. Montreal in seven.
I'm glad you've
done
it.
Both the underdogs.
I'm glad you've
done it. Pick both the underdogs. To be honest with you, if there is a Vegas-Tampa final, I probably won't even watch it. I'll be so mad.
Full disclosure, I don't think the series will be done in four games, but following the sweep trend, that's where my prediction has to lie. I think Montreal does have, the way Montreal's playing right now, they kind of match up well against Vegas, just in terms of being able to ice four solid lines against Vegas's four solid lines. The Carey Price factor is going to be huge, because Vegas's offense has also been very, very good right now, especially coming off of a series win against a goalie like Philip Grubauer. So it's kind of like Vegas versus Vegas light in terms of like just the roster depth. But I think Vegas still has the strength and is a better version of themselves, and that they'll take it pretty quickly.
Yeah, and it's going to be the battle of Nick Suzuki versus Pat Chiaretti. We'll see immediately who got the better deal.
Yeah, yeah. We'll finally figure out who won this trade, even though they both won.
And it's going to be really interesting for both of these series, because none of these teams have played each other all year. And so they're finally going to be playing each other. It's going to be like, what is this going to look like? You know,
that was my first thought with this Vegas-Montreal series, is that this is just like the most random matchup to me. That these two teams have absolutely nothing with each other other than that one trade.
One's not even in the normal conference, so it's just going to be weird. Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about the sweep, there's also the fact that Montreal has won seven in a row.
Yep.
So they may never lose again.
That is very true.
Sweep Vegas.
You're not wrong here.
I don't know. We'll see. I think they're gonna be fun matchups. I really don't know what to expect in this Montreal versus Vegas matchup. It's like, it seems so random. It's like normally they play each other twice a year. What is this going to look like in a series? Is it going to be one where it's like, at the end of it, are fans going to be like, I hate those guys? Or are they going to be like, that was a good series?
Yeah. I mean, this series could very well have more games in it than these two teams have ever played against each other in Vegas's long history. To put this in perspective of just how this matchup just is nothing right now. It could be the start of something interesting. You never know, like that random cross-conference rivalry.
Yeah, it really could. Also, I forgot to mention this when we were talking about Montreal, but it's really cool to see Bergevin just down at the bench when the team wins the series, just to see like a GM like go down there.
Yeah,
to
he's
be
down
with the
there
boys.
And
it's really
the boys.
Cool.
I keep joking to you that he keeps going and congratulating the guys on buying him another year.
Yeah, I know what I'm doing. Yeah, it's really cool to see that, you know, GM just like, yeah, let's go Selly
actually
boys.
Involved
Like,
in
we
the
won.
team culture and not just like a distant suit.
Yeah, like he like runs down from the press box and he's there by the time they get off the ice. It's like he must have just been booking it.
Well, I mean, it's Bergevin.
There.
You've seen the guy.
Yeah, he's jacked. I think there was a joke going around that that's why Scheifele got 4 games is because Bergevin went into Dobbs and flexed. I was like, I'm thinking 4 games. Like,
yeah, Bergevin walked in with a massive weight and just started lifting it in Peros's office.
Yeah, he just mogged everybody there. Just I'm the alpha. Listen to me. And then the last thing that I kind of just wanted to check in with you on was the fact that Buffalo held on to the first draft pick in the draft lottery. So do you think that that will save their franchise?
Well, I mean, in the words of their GM, it's a great moment for the franchise. So I think he's hopeful.
Yeah.
So it's a very Buffalo thing, though, to get the first pick in the draft that no one knows what's going to happen because there hasn't been any junior games really to scout.
Yeah, and the only real change in the draft lottery was Seattle moving up to, what, second from third?
Yeah, yeah, them and Anaheim switched 2 and 3.
So I think it'd be really awesome to see Seattle, like, trade that pick as
they
part
could,
of, like,
yeah,
their expansion. It'd be so awesome.
They could, because, I mean,
why not?
It's a second overall pick. They'd probably get quite a bit for it, you know, if they want to.
Yeah.
They could probably even get, a more reliable prospect than what they might be getting, because I'm not quite sure if there's, like, a consensus second overall pick.
Maybe trade down to Anaheim. Like, how much is
your pick
the
back?
Second spot really worth to you? Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was just kind of interesting that there wasn't really a lot of movement there. But yeah, poor Buffalo. At least they did hang on to the first overall.
Finally.
It would have sucked if they didn't. It'd be just one more thing. Like, why not? Yeah.
Yeah, just it's a very Buffalo thing. I mean, it's a Buffalo thing for them to have lost it, but it's also a Buffalo thing to get it this year.
Yeah, either way, lose.
That wraps things up for this time here on Clappercast. Make sure you rate and review this episode and toss a follow or subscribe our way. For more content, you can follow us on Facebook or Instagram at Clappercast Media or on Twitter at Clappercast. Thank you all for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with more hockey talk.